Bob Miller discusses the AOPA PAC letter that prompted last week's editorial. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. I'm here with my regular Monday guest, CFI Bob Miller, publisher of Over the Airwaves and proprietor of Bob Miller Flight Training in Western New York. Last week, Bob got a fundraising solicitation from the AOPA Political Action Committee, and it prompted both a guest editorial on the ANN website last week and a piece that will appear in the March issue of Bob's own newsletter.
I did, Paul, and I suspect all of us who are members of AOPA received the same letter from Craig Fuller asking for our contributions to support their political action campaign efforts on behalf of AOPA to protect us, to protect our industry, to help keep airports open, to keep the airspace free for all of us to fly in, to keep user fees down to a workable level. And I was okay, and I was tracking right along with it until it got down to a statement where Mr. Fuller said, and I'm quoting, "Not a single piece of general aviation legislation or regulation will advance without our input." And that just brought up some memories of political or legislative struggles that I know the AOPA has been in to protect the passage of any rule, regulation, or law that might represent a burden on pilots. And that rings of apple pie and motherhood to me as well. But then I began to wonder, how does AOPA react to legislation that may be good for general aviation, but a burden on member pilots? And that was the burr that kind of started wrinkling under my saddle. I've long time believed that AOPA, and I'm a member, and it's a great organization, but we have to keep in perspective they are a membership organization, not a safety organization. And I'm, like many others, are troubled by the fact that we have an unrelenting fatal accident rate approaching 300 accidents a year, fatals a year. And I can't help but think that's 300 communities that get turned off to general aviation year after year after year that could be changed by some improvements in our regulations, the regulations that qualify us to be pilots, the regulations that pertain to our recurrent training requirements. Some of these rules really need to be brought up into the 21st century, and AOPA by design will block any such regulation if it represents a burden on its member. And that's where I began to take issue with Craig's letter.
Okay, now, I'm going to be on the devil's advocate side of a lot of this conversation. And we've had kind of this conversation before, but I am aware of at least two instances going on this year in which the FAA is imposing solutions looking for problems. In other words, no evidence that the change in regulation, the more onerous or more expensive regulation, will affect the result that is intended. And so there are some, what I consider to be very useful and important protections in the rulemaking process that force the FAA to prove that for all the additional burden they'll put on people, it will make a difference. I guess where I differ with some of what you say, Bob, and I'm sure that this is what AOPA would say, although I don't want to put words in their mouth, is that not everybody makes the same leap of logic that you do to assume that mandating these additional levels of training will have an impact on the accident rate. What do you say to that?
Well, I would say that not all regulation is good regulation, clearly. But we cannot adopt a position that says we cannot allow the camel's nose into the tent door. If they allow any regulation affecting Part 61, pilot qualification and training, then we're going to get the whole camel, which means it may just change everything and throw the baby out with the bathwater. I believe that AOPA just universally thwarts any potential change to the regulation that has a direct impact on us pilots. Now, you know, whether or not we need to have pictures on our certificates, whether or not we have to re-register our airplanes every 3 years, Granted, those have no issues pertaining to safety that I can identify. Even the fact that some of us may have to be carded if we're operating on airports that have a scheduled airline service from a TSA perspective. I think that, too, is a wasted effort. But there are certain aspects of the rules pertaining to pilot qualification and training, flight instructor qualification and training, that were put on the books in the dark ages of aviation in the 1940s and 1950s. They are still there today. They need to be changed. Now, we change these regulations at the Part 121 level when we look at things like crew rest requirements. These regulations do change, and unfortunately, they come about as a result of terrible airline crashes. What we do not have in general aviation, we kill more people in general aviation than the airlines do. The only thing is we don't do it all at the same single event, so that we never see an outrage with the problem we have at GA. We're killing ourselves slowly. The problem is the data. Look at the accident data. AOPA, AAA, all of us recognize the fact that our fatal accident rate continues unabated. There has been no significant reduction. We see the numbers of pilots declining. We see 300 communities a year getting turned off to general aviation. Our industry is going south and our population is growing. Something needs to be changed. Now, the question is, yes, everybody agrees that something needs to be changed. The big question, how do we do it? Some would suggest that we do it through a cultural change, that we change the curriculum, we change the standards. And I'm saying that's preaching to the choir, Paul. This will affect people that are genuinely concerned and want to be better pilots. But we have to work with the entire church, not the choir. We have, I would guess, 80% of the pilots out there really are not even being targeted. They're not even opening the journals. They're not reading the AOPA magazine. They don't care. They're out there flying. They enjoy their privilege of flying. And we can't get to them if we wanted to. The only thing that will get to that segment of our population, unfortunately, is a regulatory change.
All right, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to dig in a little bit more to that part of it. Bob Miller is my guest. More in a moment. I'm Paul Platt. You're listening to a special feature from AeroNews.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Piperjet.
Pipermatch.
Global expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Platt here in a robust discussion with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves about whether regulation is necessary to resolve our unabated fatal accident rate in general aviation. And Bob, you use a couple of analogies here. You talk about preaching to the choir. There is a different level of commitment between the person who puts on the choir robe and goes up in the loft than there is in the person who sits in the back row of the pews. How do we justify forcing that person in the back row to come up into the loft?
We do it because the person in the back row is far more numerous than the choir members. AOPA will tell us, they've told me directly, that they can expect in any given year to reach about 15,000 pilots, you know, unduplicated numbers, 15,000 pilots with safety seminars, with books, with tapes, with materials. That's 5% at best of the total general aviation pilot population. 5%. What about the other 95%? These are the folks that are not even aware. Phil Boyer, who I've had a lot of respect for over the years, said, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make him drink. And my reply to Phil had always been, they will not drink if they do not know they're thirsty. That the population of pilots out there largely do not know the risks that they undertake when they step foot in an airplane. That's what we have to deal with. If they're not aware of the risks that they assume when they get in an airplane after having not flown for 2 or 3 months in the winter, they're just flying on a wing and a prayer. They're an accident waiting to happen. And to protect themselves from themselves, we need to have responsible, updated, valid rules and regulations that govern such things as currency. If you're not flying 100 hours a year, maybe we ought to have a flight review that by a qualified instructor. You're not going to get most of these people to buy into that unless it's required by the rule. Well, I don't think it takes a great leap of logic to assume that it will. It may keep that individual out of the sky if that responsible flight instructor says, listen, this guy's lost it. Just like a flight instructor can presumably keep a person out of the sky, at least for a little while, until they find somebody who will pass them on a flight review.
If there are people out there who have had additional instruction, who are going to seminars, who are doing the things that will result in improved proficiency, who are getting flight reviews more often than the legal maximum term requires, don't they provide a possible group to study to demonstrate the effectiveness of those measures that you'd propose to put into regulation?
I think, Paul, you could be onto something with regard to doing this kind of comparative study. But then again, the FAA has told us that individuals who participate in their WINGS program have a lower accident rate than those who do not participate in the WINGS program. But that's kind of a spurious argument. I would maintain that those who participate in the WINGS program are more safety-minded to begin with. They are a more aware group of pilots who recognize the importance of this kind of training, and therefore, it's a chicken and egg kind of a comparison. I just kind of have to come back to the fact that the rules governing pilot proficiency qualification were formulated back in a much simpler age of aviation. Today, the world is a whole lot more complex. There's two ways of solving the problem. One is through gentle coercion, education, causing pilots to become aware. This is the approach that the AOPA has taken very, very actively since their existence. But, Paul, it ain't working. We're not fixing the problem. It's not getting any better. It's getting worse. And therefore, we need a change in the paradigm. We need a change in the direction. And the only thing that is not being changed significantly are the rules and the regulations pertaining to pilot qualification and training.
All right. Last question. Bob, to the extent that an increase of 50% in the minimums required to be a private pilot, it ends up raising costs for some people, at least some people, what about all those folks who say that rising costs are the big problem? What if they're right? If that is the case, we'll drive down numbers even further.
Okay, but we have to look at all costs. What is the single largest cost that I pay as a flight school is insurance. I pay over $50,000 a year in aircraft and liability insurance because of the relative risks associated with this business. And those risks are pegged at what the accident rate is pegged at. If we can reduce the accident rate, then those costs arguably would go down significantly. As far as increasing the number of training hours, we're doing it anyway. We know that the private pilot takes, on average, 65 hours to get their private pilot certificate, despite the fact that the rule says you need a minimum of 40. I'm suggesting let's take the rule up to 60 and use those additional hours responsibly. Let's put into the rulemaking process that which is in fact practice to begin with. And as a result, we will be more honest with our incoming students. We will not build an expectation that they can accomplish this in 40 hours when in reality it is taking 65 hours. I don't want to sound like I have a sweet, simple solution to a long-standing problem. I think in summary, Paul, there's two ways that we can go about this. The AOPA way, we'll call it, which is paradigm shifts, which is changing the culture, which is producing voluntary compliance. That's one way. The other way is through regulatory improvements. We have done very little with regulatory changes when it comes to pilot qualification and training. We've done a whole lot the AOPA way, and yet the problem is not getting any better. The AOPA way is not working. I'm suggesting an improvement in the rules. Unless there's a third way out there that nobody has thought of, I think we have to look at the rules, because the accident data is not improving. And you talk to Craig Fuller and ask him flat out, are you happy with the direction the fatal accident rate is taking over the last 15 or 20 years? I'm certain he would have to say, no, he's not happy with that. Nobody would be happy with that. Therefore, you have to say, you know, unless we're changing our solutions, is a high level of madness.
Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate your getting our juices flowing first thing in the week. And we'll see where this goes, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
Visit overtheairwaves.com to register to receive Bob's March issue and look for his recent guest editorial titled, Could AOPA Be Selling Us Out? Dated February 9th at aero-news.net. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.